to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about expectations. And you know this is, of course, a global show, but pretty much all over the world, there's kind of an expectation at the year end, at the holiday season. Now I know that this is not exactly the year end for everybody, but no matter what, people have expectations when they come in to a negotiation, even a workshop, a seminar, anything where we need to get people together and reach consensus and maybe even learn something that they can use everywhere, all their lives. Yes. So, as we often do, let's try to get together the areas that we're going to talk about because this, of course, is not a scripted show. We go wherever our conversation takes us. And I see we have lots of people. Thank you all for being here. So let's start off with one of our basic questions, like we often do. And let's ask, what kinds of expectations do we as leaders have within our context of a dispute resolution, a negotiation, a consensus building, even a workshop and a seminar, because really they are consensus and team building practices too, and they get quite like real life now, don't they? Yes. Yeah, we usually do them as a series, and oftentimes one after another, maybe even whole day ones. Yeah. And so as we get better at it as we go forward with our workshops and our seminars and also with our real-life alternative dispute resolution, we get more understanding of each other and we think about our expectations, yes, and whether they're being met and accommodated. So what type of expectations do we have? You know what? We've got some real agreement here. I think the first one we're going to be talking about is that we have an expectation, have a sincere interest in the outcome. Yeah, that they've got a sincere interest, that they're really there because they want to know what's going on. They want to participate in it. And, you know, I'm going to do this as a second topic because it really kind of is. But a lot of people are talking about the word good faith, that everyone will participate in good faith. Not only have a sincere interest, but they'll participate in good faith, well, in the direction that our group is working towards, right? Because sometimes there's many different opinions about something, and people have to participate in good faith that they're all on the same basic side, right? Yeah. Yeah, so let's do that as two as separate ones. Excuse me, I'm just going to reach for this. Hello. It is a live show, isn't it? It's like, yay. I'm going to say our next one, I'm going to call it competence. People are talking about really after you say that you can do something as a participant, and this applies to leaders too, really. You say that, yes, no problem, right? Oh, I hate that phrase, no problem, because it means that somebody hasn't recognized the difficulty. Yes. But everybody needs to be competent, right? Yeah. They need to be able to do whatever it is they said that they will do. So we have an expectation of competence, right? You know what I'm going to call? We're going to have quite a few of them. We'll get there. I'm going to call the next one an expectation that people will truly be team players, right? Often, sometimes the big group itself as the team. It's not such a huge group, and we're all kind of understand what needs to be done. And sometimes we make smaller teams to go off and do a specific task and then bring it to the group as a whole, right? But you need team players. You need people that will really not just go, oh, somebody else is going to do it, right? And I'm going to say our last one because it's such an important one, and it applies all across the board. Participants, and you as leader too, need to be willing to listen with an open mind and modify unrealistic expectations, right? We all come in with expectations. Yeah, a lot of you are calling them preconceived notions. That's true, too. They really are. That's what an expectation is, right? Excuse me. Oh, sorry. Thank you. People are going, bless you. Thank you. I could use all the blessings I could get. Oh, my. Just got off a plane. It's kind of like, oh, yes, I've been in a petri dish of germs. Fabulous. But people need to be willing, leader also, to kind of modify their expectations, modify their preconceived notions, because they can't, when you come in, you've got kind of high and lofty ones maybe, kind of really unrealistic when it comes down to it. And we want to move forward. We're practical people. We don't hold groups and teams and stuff just, well, we do for workshops and seminars, but just so we can hear ourselves talk. We want to get something done, right? And sometimes we're a little ahead of ourselves. We're a little ahead of ourselves in that we have skipped a few steps. And it's unrealistic to expect the whole result now, right? So you have to be willing to listen and to modify expectations that might, well, be a little bit too much for now, right? Yes. So we need to sometimes modify our expectations. So let's get started. Yeah. So we're going to start out with the fact that people need to have a sincere interest, right? Yeah. Sincere interest. You know, Elizabeth and others are making a good point that especially in the employment arena, and I deal with a lot of multinationals, and I deal with a lot of companies that have internal rules and sometimes even external requirements mandated by law, for example, that they need to have like employee groups and ways of doing things and maybe even unions, which is a whole different concept and a whole another set of contractual obligations that are set upon the regular employment ones, right? Right. And so it's a good point. A lot of people are talking about compulsory participation. Somebody's, well, maybe the entire group, is there because they're kind of required to. You know what, ladies and gentlemen, just give me 1 second. I have got to blow my nose. Yes, it's because I sneezed. Yes, hang on 1 second. I know this is terribly rude, but there's no time delay on these shows. And so give me a sec. I'll be right. It's kind of like, shall we all hum and do music? I'll be right back. Oh, goodness gracious. Sorry about that. Thank you. Yes, I hope you all didn't hear the honking. It's like a goose trying to mate with another goose. Anyway, so a lot of times we have compulsory participants. They're there because they're forced to be. But the idea of it is, yes, Thomas would say, and others are saying, even if you're compulsory, a lot of times you have a choice as to which group to join, right? You have a choice. I'm just taking a sip of water. You have a choice, and you choose something that interests you. And even if you're compulsory, don't you have an interest in keeping your job? Yeah. Yeah. So you do have a sincere interest in being deemed a good group participant by the leader. Yes, a lot of times when I do a group like that, and we are, well, let's think. Sometimes we're negotiating employee benefits, right? That's a sincere interest. You want to know what kind of good stuff you're going to get. And the employer representatives have an interest in keeping costs down. That's a sincere interest, too. I mean, hey, it doesn't have to be a personal, sincere interest. It has to be an interest that really makes us work sincerely and really be interested and really want to come and be enthusiastic about the outcome. Yes. When I do a group that is kind of corporate and mandatory like that, I like to negotiate my for myself, and I everyone knows this, so I always get it. I like to have a pass-fail, not a grade, but I like to be able to report if people are not participating and taking a sincere interest, maybe even not coming, and like that. I want to be able to. Yeah, I want to be able to think on them. I'm not shy about that, because that's how you keep control and you keep an interest level in a group that's got to be there. They didn't volunteer. And one of the ways to do that is to have input on their participation to be able to grade them. Yes. Oh, some of you actually do a report on each one. I do not. I kind of object to doing that. First of all, it's terrible time-consuming. Second of all, it is, well, you know, I'm in the United States and we're a litigious country. It's potential liability because it's potential defamation, and I don't want to get into that area. And I'm not going to just say you know, lovely things about everybody if I don't think them. But I do want to be able to have the power to force you to have sincere interest. Yes. Or get out of my group, because you're hurting the group dynamic. If you're kind of sitting there, I was forced to be here in person, but I don't have to participate. I don't have to talk. I don't have to think. I can just sit here with my arms crossed and look surly. No, you can't. Not in my group. Not. You must be a sincere interest participant. Even if your sincere interest is, I give you a passing grade. I don't give grades, actually. I give a fulfilled obligation, satisfied type thing. Yeah. Like a pass-fail, yes. Mm-hmm. And if I have to deal with you more than a day of surliness, and I talk to you privately and we discuss what's the matter with you, which would be the 5W questions. That's a very good point. Mm-hmm. The 5W questions permeate everything, really. So we might as well do them right up front, right? The 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Mm-hmm. And those are the things you ask to find out how come perhaps someone is not taking a sincere interest or fully participating, which will be our next one, fully participate in good faith, right? Yeah. And you find out how come. And then you either come to an agreement that this will not prevent you from taking a sincere interest and being a actual valid member of the group. Or you come to the conclusion that maybe you should join a different group because I'm not putting up with you. Yeah. And it is important in what happens if a level of person is required to participate. I see that a lot. I see that a lot in multinationals where a level of employment supervisor, for example, a departmental head, for example, they are required to participate in this particular group that I'm leading because of their job level, because they all need to know something. Sometimes it's a training also, kind of a how to deal with your employees and team lead and like that type training. We do a whole bunch of them. And somebody is not willing to be there. They're not taking a sincere interest. But they're on the level that's required to go. This is the part where we do the 5W questions. and I find out whether or not they'd like to stay on that level. Because we're going to have to take an interest because our job's on the line. That's why as a leader, you need some teeth. You need some power so that you can make the group dynamic strong. They will, once they unclench their teeth and uncross their arms, surprisingly enough, they will be one of the best participants in your group. It's just that some people have to be informed that they need to do that, right? Yeah. And I've seen that that's the weirdest thing. The ones that were the most recalcitrant to the beginning, once we had our little 5W questions, who, what, where, when, and why, you know, you don't have to break them all out, right? You pick which one you need, or one or two. And once we've had our little talk, and they find out that they gotta, which they do gotta, or they can leave and either suffer the consequences or go to a much worse group because it's not being led by me or us. Yes, yes, yes. It's being led by someone who is less experienced and will get nowhere. When we have that, they become the best participants. Because they've decided to commit. They've made a conscious decision, and it's as though they are voluntary, even though it's compulsory. Yeah, so, So a lot of times there's lots of choices, which means that if they chose yours, it was because of sincere interest. And sincere, yes, I'm looking, a lot of people are talking about the choices of the mandatory, and sometimes the choice is kind of made because of, I'm going to call it convenience. The group meets at the right time for your schedule, for example, the right location, close to home, good parking. I mean, these are all considerations. I confess this. Yeah. I mean, we've all done that. I did it in college. In college, I was an anthropology major, not because of a deep, abiding need to want to be an anthropologist, but because I wanted the degree, I was going on to law school, I had this as my goal, and the head of the department never came on a Friday, which meant that there were no classes on Friday, which meant if you were really careful, you didn't have to go to school on Friday. Yay, team! Yeah, so sometimes there's an outside reason, but it doesn't mean that you can't be sincere and enthusiastic, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Jocelyn and others are saying that a lot of times there's an interest in keeping your job, and Hussein says that oftentimes you develop an interest after you join the group and you get excited. Good point. Hussein is absolutely right. Once you're in and you've made up your mind or you understand that you need to be in, whichever way, but and then you get excited about it because it's interesting, because it's something that needs to be done. Because the other participants are enthusiastic and excited, because the leader is good, and we're really getting somewhere. I find that a lot of times some people who are kind of involuntary, it's a compulsory group, a lot of times they're feeling put upon because they've been to this kind of a group before where it's compulsory, and it really got nowhere. And that's really the truth. It was a bummer. It was one of those things that just, it's kind of like, really? It just didn't get anywhere. It was a time waster. It was just nasty. But then they get into your group, and they find out, wow, we've got a goal. We've got a mission. We've got a plan, we've got a process, we've got transparency, we're moving forward, we're going to get somewhere. Now I'm in. Yeah, because I just want to be able to get somewhere, be able to really say, look, this is working. That's fabulous. It's working. Great. Yeah. So that's the idea of the thing. Yeah. So they get excited afterwards. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this is true too. We're gonna morph our way into good faith also, because that's their heads up. Allison and Hussein and others are talking about that sometimes people have different interests, but their goal is the same. I see that a lot. People in the room are, especially the non-compulsory, right? Yeah. The compulsory, usually they have the same basic interest. I'd like to keep my job. But the true voluntary groups, the non-compulsory, pardon me. I seem to be coming down with something. But you guys can't catch it. It's over the airways. The non-compulsory participants, yes, a lot of times they're there because they want an outcome. But their interests, why they want the outcome, are very different. And so we have to get together and work in good faith and pull together as a team, which is what we're going to talk a little bit down the road, because I'm doing them as we wrote them down is what it really is. We need to be a team, and we need to understand that even though we have really not so much in common, the thing that we have in common is we would like a certain outcome. The same outcome, but we'd like it for different reasons. But we'd like the same outcome. And I'm the leader of the group, and we can understand that. And we're going to get along with each other, and we're going to make a team, even though we wouldn't necessarily have anything in common. But we do. We've got what we want as an outcome in common, which is all that counts for the group, right? Yes. Yeah, people are asking for an example. The best example, the easiest example I've seen recently is in the United States, marijuana is illegal. It is federally illegal. There has been a movement for a long time, and the players have gotten together. They used to work separately from each other, but now they have banded together as a unified unit. What they want as an outcome is legalization. Now, in the United States, in some states, that has occurred, especially with medical marijuana. And in different countries, too. Yes, people are talking. A lot of you are from different countries. This is a multinational show. Thank you all for being here. And, yes, there's a movement on in a lot of countries to legalize marijuana. Oh, I didn't know Israel was trying to do it. Good. Pardon me. At least for medical purposes. It's good for pain and for other kinds of things. Okay. So the people, the groups that want it legalized, are diverse. They don't have the same reason at all. You've got growers who want to grow it and sell it. You've got the actual retailers, same thing. They want to make money off of it. You've got senior groups who want it so that their people can do glaucoma and things like that. You've got all kinds of diseases, all kinds of afflictions, different groups with different leadership, and different agendas, so to speak, but they all want legalized medical marijuana, right? Right. And so they've had to band together because there's strength in numbers and strength in ideas, and there's no sense in replicating what's already been done. Yes, yes, and then you've got the recreational people and the people who are social contract. They are people who are interested in the society as a whole, right? Yeah, all kinds of different people banding together to say, look, this would be a good idea. Let's legalize it, tax it, and like that. Yes. Yes, and there was a whole big law thing, too, because quite frankly, in the United States, the federal law is above everything, right, above states. The federal wouldn't budge. We're trying to get it to budge. Yes, I'm on the side of legalization. But they actually did something completely wild that had never been done before. We put something federally illegal on state ballots to be voted for. And marijuana is actually legal in some states, even though the federal government still says it's illegal and could swoop down pretty much at any moment. But since we have elected officials, it would, how shall I say this delicately, be not in their interests in the states where it's gone legal, and other states are thinking on it too. Yeah. So anyway, so that's people who have different reasons for the same goal, and it needs to be pointed out to them. It really does, right? Yeah. Because we need to all work together. We need to make a team. It might be a team of the leaders of the various groups, right? Yeah, it's a team of leaders from different organizations getting together and pooling our resources. Yeah, why not? So anyway, let's get down to we're going to participate in good faith. Because quite frankly, those of us who've been here before know that I don't always make it to the recipes because we are having such a fabulous discussion. Okay, we're going to fully participate in good faith, which is going to be taken in sincere interest. Why is good faith and sincere interest different? Oh, thank you. We all understand. A lot of us understand why. Padme and others are saying because the members of an opposition group could come to derail the process. Yes, you could take a sincere interest in the other side and be kind of, well, spy is an ugly word, right? But you could be there to kind of find out what the other side is doing and seeing if you could derail it. Could make the team go away, make the opposition go away. That's taking a sincere interest in the results, but not in the results you had in mind, right? We want you to be in good faith. Mm-hmm. People are asking how to determine that. We're going to break out the 5W questions. Also, as you get more experienced, you can see if somebody is hostile, right? Yeah. And if they are on the negative, right? And we want to know why. Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, this is a good point. Well, we've got quite a few people giving examples, like you and Cheryl and other people, that where somebody was not there in good faith, but they answered the 5W questions falsely so that it seemed like they were, right? Yeah, they kind of lied when you asked them who, what, where, why, and when. Mm-hmm. Well, if somebody's truly being negative and attempting to derail the group, we could ask them to leave, right? Yeah. We could find out what organizations they're affiliated with, right? Through the miracle of the internet. Yes. And possibly Facebook. People post the darndest things on Facebook. It's like, really, you would like that to be there forever and ever and ever? Not wise. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to think about them specifically, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. And if it persists, we're going to want to know the 5W questions kind of in front of everybody and discuss it. And find out why someone is attempting to stall our progress. Yes, I am of the transparency belief. I'm not real good with subtlety. I think it's too subtle. I think that people don't understand it. When somebody is truly trying to hijack the process, to hijack the ability to reach a negotiated consensus and go forward, I'd like to know why. Mm-hmm. And if it's because I belong to an opposition group, we can go send them on their way now, can't we? Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, this is also a good point, that sometimes, Sophia and others, that sometimes you start out in good faith, but then circumstances change and you cannot fulfill your obligations, right? We are in good faith. We are enthusiastic. We're sincere in our interest. But life happens, right? Yeah, you start out in good faith, but then circumstances change. You cannot fulfill your obligations. As a practical matter, what should we do about that? Yes, as Joseph and others are saying, you need to be open to questions and problems as leader. I tell everybody that I understand that sometimes you say you can do something, but for some reason it doesn't work out. The reason might be is that you didn't quite understand what was involved. Or life happens, things happen, and you just can't put the time into it. Or a contact, a connection, somebody that you thought would help, doesn't come through, right? Yeah, it just doesn't work out for one reason or another. This is not a fatal act. We need to be open to have people ask us questions and to help them solve problems. Yeah. As Cheryl says, you get help from the group or from experts. Yeah. It's not an embarrassing thing, and it shouldn't be indicated that it is. Let's see if somebody in the group can help, knows something about it. And if not, or they're too busy, we'll call in an expert. Or maybe we'll research an expert opinion nowadays, right? Yeah. Used to be that you had to actually find somebody who was an expert. Now you can find somebody on the internet. But remember that the internet's like the Wild West. It's full of peculiar information. And if you've got something that is an opinion, you need to look for all sides. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. You and others are saying that you need a process to keep track so that no one gets lost, pardon me, or goes in a different direction. You need a process to keep track so that no one gets lost or goes in a different direction. When I've got something fairly complicated going, and I've got teams and maybe sub-teams, subcommittees, so to speak, I think it's the leader's job to keep track and keep everybody in the loop of what's going on and to keep an eye out for the fact that everybody is working on it. Right? Right. In fact, that's what I ask team leaders to do also. If you're going to be the leader, you have to keep track of how we're doing, of what progress is being made, of what people are doing in order to go forward. Mm-hmm. And to make sure that nobody's kind of falling off sideways. Mm-hmm. As you says, no one gets lost and goes in a different direction. Sometimes that happens. You think that you're doing great, but you've gone off on kind of a tangent and you don't realize it, right? Right. In all truth and honesty, I do a lot of these. I don't have time to keep track myself, usually, although I do get reports. I get kind of a synopsis from each group, which means that I have competent staff. You can hire somebody to actually keep track. Keep track even computer-wise. Keep track of the make drop boxes and keep people informed of what to do. Yeah, keep track of keeping everybody in the loop, right? Yeah, and of schedules and of deadlines and of how's it going, right? Right, yeah. Important to have somebody who does that. People are talking about a volunteer from the group. Maybe. I'm going to say it depends, which I know you guys think I say a lot, but hey, it depends. It depends how big the group, how complex the issues, whether or not there are actual deadlines, whether or not you've got subcommittees, kind of sub-teams, smaller teams, how far flung you are, right? Yeah. Because some groups, and I say this with some hesitation, might have someone who's willing to volunteer and be very good at keeping track. This is a blessing. This is fabulous. it is my tendency to think that you should have somebody who is paid and really a professional if you can afford it, if the group can afford it. Ooh, people are talking about interns. Interns are kind of like volunteers without the experience. Now, we use interns. We use them especially for events to fill in kind of the grunt work, the actual logistics, the on-the-ground logistics, tell people where you're going, manning tables and like that, right? And then they get to be basically audience for the actual seminars and workshops because they learn something. And they learn how to deal with a group. And I actually have my interns participate in the audience groups and the participant groups so that they understand it from both sides. And they can see reactions and understand how it works. In a way, people are saying that they're my spies, because then they report back to me how the groups are thinking. I suppose that's true. Didn't think about that. But not because I'm the opposition, but because I want to know that everybody's on track. It's another way of keeping things on track. Having somebody with boots on the ground really talking to people and seeing how what they're thinking and how they're doing, right? Right. I certainly don't think it's a good idea to use a new intern to actually keep track of everything. How do you know they're going to be efficient? Unless you have some reason to believe they will be. I think the same of volunteers. I tend to have somebody kind of watch the volunteer for a while to make sure that they really can, that they're really doing it. It's not that they don't want to. But sometimes you ever hear the expression that you bite off more than you can chew? It's kind of an Americanism, but it means that you said yes to something because it seemed like you could handle it. Yeah, I'll do that. I'm retired. I've got time. I'm really, really interested. Somebody has to. But when it comes down to it, it's more complicated than it seemed, and you're not quite up to it, right? This is where you have to be able to ask for help. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And because the process of keeping track is very important, because that's where a lot of groups fail. They're enthusiastic. They're sincere. They're there in good faith. But nobody's really in charge, right? And that's where we come in, and that's where we lay the process over everything. The process of keeping people informed and on track. Yeah. Well, this is a good point, too. Lynn says that good faith is earned and will dissolve if the others in the group are not in good faith. Yeah. A lot of people are using that kind of an old expression that a rotten apple spoils the barrel. The idea that if there's even one person who's truly not in good faith and working against and being a bad influence on the group dynamic, that it's going to kind of dissolve if you don't catch that and stop it. Yes, the civility rules come in here too. Yes, the civility rules are an overlay on everything. And basically speaking, the recipe for peace now, civility rules say, we will not be rude to each other. We will not be rude to each other. We will not, I don't know, be nasty. Not let somebody have their turn. That kind of thing. We will not be rude to each other, right? It's also something that the leader, of course, models. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to our next topic, because otherwise we're not going to make it in our hour. And that's an expectation of competence. An expectation of competence. Yeah. Yeah, this is a good point, really. You know, we talk about our participants as being competent, but really we have to be the most competent in the room, because our participants expect it. And they won't stay in a group that's really kind of not getting there and incompetent and just annoying. You've been in groups like that, right? Yeah. You've seen it where they have a really good idea, a really good goal, but they're just not making it. And a lot of times that's leader incompetence, too. And so we, as leaders, must be role models of not only civility rules, right, but of competence. Yeah, our participants have to have confidence that we know what we're doing. Mm-hmm, yeah. Jasmine and others are talking about the fact that a leader needs to give clear instructions, needs to be clear, need to everybody understand what it is that they're now going to go out and do, right? We need clear instructions. Mm-hmm. Hadar and others are saying you need to have transparency in the process. Yeah, we kind of touched on that. You need to understand where the group is going. Yeah, what our next steps are, and kind of why. Yeah, some groups, it depends on the group dynamic. A little bit it depends on culture. And not necessarily even outside culture, like what country you're from or what language you speak, which might be factor into it. Excuse me. I usually, when I think about culture in this respect, I usually think about corporate culture and expectations of participants, and maybe even a time limit. Yeah, which makes you kind of need to rush it along, right? Might be a deadline, might be the end of a term in some way, right? You have time limits. And that will impact the leadership style, because that has to do with the transparency and the instructions. Sometimes groups want you to just tell them what to do and give them a deadline. They call it drop-dead date. Yeah? They really do. They don't want to muss around with all this discussion and all this meetings and all this everything. We have some truly productive, down, nitty-gritty discussions about what's fact, what's not fact, what needs to be done. And then the leader makes suggestions. We form probably subcommittees and go forward and then report back to the group, right? Yeah. But the leader keeps kind of tight reins on it. I've done those. They're more efficient in a way, but sometimes they fall apart a little more because people haven't bought in as hard. They haven't really worked as hard on it. Mm-hmm. But it depends. Yeah. It depends whether they have an expectation of competence that you'll just kind of tell them what to do, and then they'll go do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Expectation of confidence, a lot of people are talking being open to questions. Mm-hmm. And Paul and others are talking about being willing to help or to get help. Yeah. That they're really, you need to be clear that if somebody said yes, but they don't exactly know how, talk about it. Let's find someone who does. Let's be open to new ideas and to questions and discussion. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mohammed and others are saying that sometimes participants volunteer. They volunteer like to do an assignment, even if they're compulsory. But they need to, but the leader and the group really too, needs to be certain that they're actually doing the assignment. They might even think they're doing their assignment, but they're kind of not, right? Yeah. The participant may volunteer, but you need to be certain that they're actually doing the assignment. I like to check in. I like to check in at regular intervals. I like to check, especially if it's something complicated. The group likes to check in, how are we doing? Because that makes a difference, maybe where everybody is headed, right? And I like to have the information disseminated amongst the group. That's one of the transparency and the efficiency things, right? And kind of like to make sure that nobody has, as Chu says, kind of gotten lost also. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You need to be willing to help or to get help. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, this is a good point, too. That, you know how we talk about the leader as being in charge and doing the process and like that? This is true, but especially in an employment situation, a lot of times when people are not, there's a certain level of employment, for example, in the group, and you've been brought in, you as leader are being judged too, right? And you have to be a good role model for all of this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people, Ken and others are calling it an additional judgment level if it's mandatory employment requirement. Yeah. Because everybody's looking at everybody else. And there might even, this is true, because they are, in some corporate cultures, kind of in an adversarial position. They're kind of always looking up for their job, for example, and someone else might be looking for it too, right? Yeah, you have to know that. You have to know that as part of the group dynamic, right? Yes. And be able to enforce good faith cooperation. Mm-hmm. Let's go on to the next one. We've kind of touched on it, that there's an expectation that you will be a team player, right? We have to work together. That's what consensus is. Mm-hmm. Yes. This is true. People are talking about teams that you choose. And as Sean says, your chosen teams are according to needed expertise. Needed expertise. Yes? I try to think rather carefully about my teams, if it's not all this, not just the one big group. The answer is that you have to kind of judge sometimes expertise, sometimes because you need to be looking for something. And in order to research, you need to have a basic understanding so that you can find what it is that you're trying to research. Does that make any sense? Yeah. So an expectation of being a team player, if you're not voluntary, you might be teamed up with expertise. That's the idea of the level of employment, too. You're all kind of horizontal to each other. You're all on the same level. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are talking about choosing teams because of personality traits. That would, of course, be a team that you choose. That actually, you could have participants who are not voluntary, but they are still choosing of sub-teams is voluntary. It's yours, right? Choosing by personality, yes, but you'd have to know the people. You'd have to have met before somewhat so that you can make a judgment like that, really know them well enough to make a judgment. Mhm. Yeah. Unless there's a click going where people kind of come together and leave together and know things together and they're excluding the other team members and kind of, you know, just making a little team of their own. If we call that a personality trait, then I divide that up. Unless there was some compelling reason why they will work well together and really be efficient. And they and their expertise is such that it really needs to analyze something, right? Because they're kind of already a team, but not usually the kind that's desirable in a group dynamic. Mm-hmm. People are talking about this, so that's personality. Also about objective traits. An objective trait would be something like experience, education, actual training in some way, right? Yeah. That's not a bad way to choose teams. You know, teams, subcommittees and like that can be switched around. Sometimes, if we're all basically the same level and level of competence, to keep it fresh and to keep people really thinking, sometimes we have teams that are only for a certain period of time and then we switch. Yeah, a kind of a actual designated not too long time frame. So that we can have new thoughts and new ideas. Yeah. Let's go up to our expectation of reasonableness, right? Yeah, that's our next one. Because I see we've only got about 10 minutes left. But we're having such a wonderful conversation. Thank you all for being here. Yes. Yes, the website with prior shows, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. An expectation of reasonableness. That's when we come in with kind of a preconceived notion, an expectation that's going to turn out to be maybe unreasonable is a bad word, but too optimistic. We'll call it that, huh? Too optimistic. It's really too early for that, if you know what I mean. Too optimistic. And so we have an expectation of reasonableness, that you're willing to listen and you're willing to modify what's basically a preconceived notion, something you came in with, you're pretty darn sure we're going to do. And then when it comes, for one reason or another, it may just be that it's too early. We've skipped some steps, right? Yes. As Kevin and others say, you need a group consensus to move forward together. So you need to have some willingness to be flexible and to modify, right? And to do this within our civility rules, right? So that no one becomes alienated or annoyed. Yeah, we need to actually have some standards, some way of saying, look, this is how it should be. This is what we can do now. These are the steps that we need to take. Let's go forward and work our way through this difficulty, this problem. Yes. You need a group consensus, exactly, to move forward. Sean and others are saying that you have to listen with empathy. Remember, and we've talked about this prior shows, right, archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. And empathy is understanding, not agreement, right? Understanding, not agreement. Yeah, so we have to have some empathy. And, yeah, and in order to have the empathy, a lot of times we break out the 5W questions again, don't we? Who, what, where, when, and why? The 5W questions, empathy. And we have to listen with that empathy, right? Yes. Listen with understanding so that we can get down to consensus for what we commonly want as our outcome. You know what we were going to do? What do participants expect of the leader as the next one? And this is kind of funny because a lot of people expected me to make that the next topic. What do the participants expect of the leader? And Lisa and others are saying that the participants have really the same expectations of the leader as the leader has of the participants. We're expected to be sincerely interested in a successful outcome. We're expected to act with good faith and with competence. And we need to be good team players and good makers of teams, really think about it, right? And we came in with some expectations that we found out are, well, not yet. They may not be unreasonable, but they are, at the moment, need to be modified. So we, too, have to listen with empathy, which is not agreement, and modify any, well, unrealistic for the moment, expectations. Yes. Whatever the participants expect of us, the same that we expect of them. All those good things, right? Yeah. Pardon me. Suki says also we need to add impartiality. As leader, we are the third party impartial, right? We are the people who are going to get all the various sides together and reach consensus. Therefore, we do not evidence a side. Being human, we might think someone has a better point than someone else, but being leader, we will act in an impartial, fair manner to all. Mm-hmm. Yes, Conrad and others are talking about the fact that our participants expect us to be a model and an enforcer of the civility rules. Mm-hmm. We cannot enforce the civility rules, which basically say we will not be rude to one another, and we'll take turns when speaking. I usually use it if I've got that kind of a group, because it depends. I actually use a kitchen timer so that everybody knows that they've been treated fairly, right? We need to be models of the civility rules. We need to be really, really careful of them, because we cannot ask people to follow a rule that we ourselves are violating. It's unreasonable. We must be able to say, look, this is how it goes. This is how we will act in order to reach consensus, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're models of the civility rules. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Zoe and others are saying that that as leaders we keep everyone on track and moving forward. We do, don't we? We keep everyone on track and moving forward, because that's how we get the good reputation for efficiency and for really getting something done. Yeah, and not just allowing things to kind of just wander around and talk about theory, and we get all done with it. It's been a giant waste of time. No, we want to really be effective, really have something to show for our time and effort. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so we are the ones that keep it transparent, keep it civil, and help all of our diverse people to reach agreement. Right? Right. Yes. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to be doing the recipes next week. I know usually one. I will try to do the pepper and steak pasta one because it's been around a while. We haven't done the recipe a couple of times. Thank you all for being here. We've run out of time. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Pardon me. Our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. If you want your prior shows, they're archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.